I don't like this business of preaching to fans.
Calm down, Greg. It's soccer. It's soccer.
You know anything else about soccer?
Not much. All I know is I got a lot of balls.
You know, it doesn't matter if you're in the stadium watching a game on TV. It's just the guy's not good enough. The guy is just not good enough.
Simon, I don't know if you're big into New Year's resolutions, but, you know, wondering if maybe you pledged to come out of your shell a little bit in 2015.
Kind of pisses me off, to be honest.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC Channel 94 and MLSsoccer.com.
It's
I am Andrew
Wiebe.
I know you can feel that. I was wondering what you were doing when I was gone. That's David Goss, of course. We have a special co-host. I don't want to call you a third wheel, Kalen. Kalen Carr,
Whoa.
Former MLS.
Why would you even go there?
I don't know. It just came to me. Former MLS forward, now doing some work on the media side,
it
on the dark side.
It would be an honor to be your third wheel.
Oh,
Andrew.
Man.
Yes.
Now we have our third wheel. Not
That's now your go-to.
Yeah,
man.
He's more functional. He's more functional than the third wheel. Big show today. Pablo Mastroianni, head coach of the Colorado Rapids, the guy making the decisions when it comes to the all-star roster. I know that's going to have some people asking some questions. We'll talk to him about his process with that and about the Gold Cup. It's easy to forget he was a stalwart back in the day for the U.S. Men's National Team. Won a Gold Cup, a few Gold Cups, I believe, himself. But first, guys, Giovanni Dos Santos. He's here. It's announced. It's official. We pretty much knew. Everybody pretty much knew. It was like the 2-week rumor mill.
It's been like 2 years.
Yeah, basically.
To start it out. And now it's done. And I don't know. I am pretty excited about it because he's an in-his-prime Mexican national team star. And they're the biggest team in America. They are the largest soccer team in America.
Yeah,
club, national, doesn't matter. It's a market that people are trying to tap into in terms of fans, but it's just great energy. You guys have been at the Gold Cup this year. I mean, those fans just bring energy. Mm-hmm. It's a great environment. He's a talented, exciting player. I could see how it could go wrong. I'm not saying it can't go wrong, but I think it's an exciting moment for the league, and it might be one of the biggest signings ever.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to pick LA to win it all before they made that signing, and so now you have to think, how good can they really be? This might be, I don't know, a lot of people would say it, but this could be one of the better teams you've seen in MLS in a long time.
Yeah, maybe ever. And you look at what Bruce Arena does. He always seems to kind of like lull you to sleep the first half of the year. And you're like, man, LA, maybe not this year. And then they just spank all comers in the second half of the year. You look at this lineup now. Sebastian Leggett, he's a guy we had on the show. We enjoyed his interview. He's turned into maybe the best acquisition of the midseason of any team in MLS. I mean, Giovanni Dos Santos has a lot to do to match his production. That sounds crazy to say, but it's true. You put those guys on the wings, Keenan Zardes up top. I mean, that's pretty incredible in itself. A guy named Steven Gerrard, Juninho in the middle, Rogers, De La Garza, Gonzalez, Leonardo, Pinedo. I mean, Pinedo and Leonardo are really only the kind of weak spots there. And Pinedo is just the Panamanian national team goalkeeper and pretty much the best goalkeeper of Gold Cup history. So this team's got it going on.
Yeah, when you look at that roster, it's not just stars. You know, LA have done a good job of bringing in players that fit into their system well. Bajo Husidic, Leggett.
Dan Garten, yeah, Leggett. I know it's hard to he said it two or three different ways.
He came on this show, told us how to say it, and then Andrew got it wrong 10 seconds later when he tried to copy it.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Jossie's a guy I've been watching, obviously, with the U.S. team. He's a talented young guy, so they've really got it, the right mix of guys, too. I think you worry sometimes when you have so many stars, how does that all fit together? But I think the thing that LA does really well is identify talent around the league that can come in and help play a role.
Now, a guy named Cuauhtémoc Blanco was not in his prime when he came to MLS, but you were kind of a firsthand witness of Blanco insanity there in Chicago. What do you remember from those days? What do you think LA has in store for them with Gio?
Well, he ended up playing another like 15 years, so technically that was his prime. Yeah, and his game never really relied on speed or physicality or anything. I mean, most of the stories I have for Blanco are probably not suitable for air, but one of the best guys ever, actually, I played with, one of my favorite teammates, just a real good locker room guy. It's funny to say, a lot of people don't know that about him, but kept the mood light always and always wanted the ball in meaningful moments in the game. Just a fantastic player. But I think you'll see with Gio some of the similar stuff where anywhere we went, I mean, we went to Salt Lake and it was packed full of Mexican fans who had showed up, and I didn't really think there was tons of Mexican people in Salt Lake. Apparently there are, but literally everybody who was one was there. Mm-hmm. And so everywhere you go, people would quit their, like literally people would leave their work in airports just to come say hi, and they would just leave the place unattended. So it was wild with him, and he had to have security with him everywhere. And I think you'll see a similar boom probably with Gio.
Still one of my favorite guys in the league, a guy that you can imagine sitting down next to on a Friday night at a bar, and then you find out, hey, he's a world-class soccer player. Some other moves in the league here on the trade side this week between shows. Corey Ash headed from Houston to Orlando. Of course, they brought in Run DMB, and then Corey kind of lost his spot. He's a former All-Star himself, though. This was a great move for Orlando. I believe you played with him in Houston, right? What are they getting?
Yeah, I mean, Corey's a competitor first and foremost. I was a little bit surprised that he hasn't been utilized in Houston. I mean, even off the bench, whatever it is, I thought that they would maybe fit the both of them into the lineup somehow and find a way. But it's good for Corey to get a move. I think it was time to get a new change of pace, even though he's been in Houston since the team started.
Yeah,
so
he's
been there forever. But I think he's going to get – Orlando's going to get a really good player there, left back. He's feisty, quick, one of the quickest players in MLS in the entire league. So I think he's going to really help them.
One of my favorite interviews of all time, mostly because he wasn't afraid to call me out when he thought I didn't know what I was talking about. Always entertaining those playoff runs for the Dynamo. Sabarillo, moving on from Real Salt Lake. We were talking about them. He is no longer – and Clarence Cobalt, and that's weird.
Yeah.
He's been there for a long time. He was one of the guys that really got this franchise off the ground, really moved them forward. But RSL sends him to DC United for Luis Silva, who has been very good in flashes. He's been hurt a lot, of course. But why, Dave? DC's right there at the top. It doesn't necessarily feel like they need to make a move, but this is a reinforcement, right?
It's the type of move where, okay, we're on the verge. It's not a gamble, like going all in, but we have to take a shot at going for MLS Cup. And you have to make your team as good as you can. Luis Silva is extremely talented when he's healthy. So are you going to gamble on that as a team in DC where you might have a potential to go to an MLS Cup? You're going to bring in a guy who you know you can get production from and has the potential to be a star.
But you're kind of gambling on form, though, with Sabo, aren't you? Because he hasn't been the same Sabo.
You could say that, but I think on the flip side, you could say that it hasn't been the same RSL. And so it's a guy who's still playing in the Costa Rican national team, which is a team that went to the quarterfinals of the World Cup. And so it's a guy who's still a star in this league, even though maybe he's at towards the end of his career. And then on the flip side for RSL, you get a kid in Luis Silva who, if he can stay healthy, could be a stud. But they have more time now to maybe take that risk because they're not pushing for an MLS Cup this year.
Yeah, I think it has playoffs written all over this move. I mean, I think Rolfi plays a little bit underneath, a little bit. Same with Silva. And then Espíndola makes a lot of runs kind of wide. And Sabarillo is a guy who's going to just be a focal point for them, just right up top. Playoffs, I feel like it's going to be a really good move for them.
A guy who can score tough goals in the playoffs, which is what they seem to lack last year.
Could really pay off for them. A true center forward, Alvaro Sabarillo. He is still alive with Costa Rica in the Gold Cup. We'll get to that in the second segment. A lot of Gold Cup talk to go over. Of course, the knockout rounds coming up this weekend. One other trade, though. This one was not really a surprise. Bakary Soumaré came out in Montreal on Wednesday and said, look, I want to leave. I got to get out of here. It ended up happening. Kyle Becker to the Impact. Soumaré on his way to FC Dallas. It's the second time in a year Kyle Becker has been traded. He and Canada just knocked out of the Gold Cup as well. Another acquisition to bring across your desk out there, Jefferson Mena, 26-year-old Colombian center back. Allocation money for an international spot to LA allows NYCFC to pick him up. Of course, they have three new defenders, Angelino and Andoni Iraola, as well as some guy named Lampard and another guy named Pirlo. So we'll see what they're going to do with those guys. Two of them on NYCFC will be in the All-Star game. That is actually not two of them. How am I lumping in Steven Gerrard there? They feel like they go together.
I thought you were saying Villa and Lampard.
Oh, that's true. They
you
do have two.
You could have gotten that right.
I could have gotten that right. It was almost. Let's talk a little All-Star before we bring on Pablo Mastroianni. Of course, he is the coach of the All-Stars. You may have seen the Fan 11. You may have seen the commissioner's picks. You probably know that those are Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard. And the All-Star Fan 11, Ramondo, Beasler, Gonzalez, DeMarcus Beasley, Michael Bradley, Benny Feilhaber, Graham Zusi, David Villa, Clint Dempsey, and Obafemi Martins. A lot of people were upset about this. Why, Dave?
I think people felt like, well, for starters, I think a lot of people think Jovinko's the best player in the league right now, and he's not on that list. So that alone is kind of upsetting. And I think there's a little bit of controversy in that Gerrard and Lampard have zero MLS appearances in their career combined, and they're in the All-Star game. Personally, as a fan, it's a exhibition. It's entertainment. I don't know, Kalen, if for players they see it differently or if it really is something that they care about.
I think guys care. You want to get we want to get that recognition and get on the big stage. I think I'm with guys on this one. I think guys like Kamara is a guy that needs to be in this game, and it should be a reflection of the best players in the league, and that happens on the field and not off it, right?
Yeah, Kai Kamara had a few things to say about this. Initially, he said, look, I'm not worried about missing out on the Fan 11. I'll just chime in here. Look, it's the Fan 11. The fans voted on this, so for the fans to get upset about those picks, to me, smacks of, I don't want to say ignorance here, but look, you're the ones that are voting. Get out there and vote. Kansas City found a way to get three people on the 11. He said he's not worried, and then he said, I want to be part of it. I still want to be part of it. And then he said, it's simple, the equation. You're either a U.S. national team player or you're a DP to be on there. That, in some ways, rings true, I think, in the Fan 11 commissioner pick side. Look, it's going to be the names. But remember, there's a ton more names that'll get on here, a ton more guys that'll get recognition. Pablo Mastroianni will be the guy that brings them on there. We'll bring on the Colorado Rapids head coach right now. Pablo, how's it going?
It's going great, guys.
Well, look, I'm looking at your bobblehead here. We've got a nice collection of them in the ETR studios. It's got a soul patch. It doesn't have a mustache, so I feel like it's accurate now, but I'm more concerned with what happened to the mustache. That thing was – that was making an impact.
Yeah, no, I think it became it became hard to keep up, and two, as the world would have it, the caterpillar eventually turned into a butterfly, and overnight it disappeared.
It flew away. There was nothing happened. There was no forced metamorphosis here. Your wife wasn't on that front. Nothing like that.
No, to be honest, I think my family was a bit shocked the first couple minutes, and then they're like, Dad, we like you so much better without the mustache. And my wife was kind of kissing me again, and life was just better without the mustache.
How much time are we talking here on upkeep? Are we saying like an hour of twisting it with wax before bed, like Snidely Whiplash? Like, what are we thinking here?
Well, it starts every morning, starts with a little bit of combing. I had a nice little mustache comb, and then I had the wax, and then I bought some really nice shears as well. And so it just became an obsession for a little bit, and then I realized that I was spending way too much time on this mustache, and life was happening right before my eyes. So it was a good experience, and had I known I could grow such a nice mustache, I probably would have started at a younger age. But to start this late was definitely an experience, but one that I probably won't be having anytime soon.
Well, we're asking Dave to grow his own, so maybe we can get our own ETR mustache going. You guys have won two in a row now, a little bit of a slow start for you. You said today to the media that everything is a process. Where are you at in the process of this season? Why have the wins come recently?
Well, I think if you look back at a lot of our performances, we put ourselves front and center to win games. And for lack of finishing, we haven't given up a lot of goals this year. And I think that's been the positive and has kept us in games. And then you couple that with creating a lot of good opportunities, and you think that you're doing everything right from a tactical perspective and giving yourself a chance to win games. And it just so happened that, the ball wasn't going in. And then obviously as games start to mount and the ball doesn't go in, there's confidence that's lost and belief. And I think that in the last couple of games, it's a group that continues to believe that, that we can make a run, and the performances validate that. And most importantly, it's the results that validate everything. And so two wins brings confidence in the group. Guys are scoring goals. We're scoring goals off set pieces, and something that we've struggled to do all year. So things are coming together, but it is. This league's quite fickle, and you got to keep your foot on the gas and keep pressing and keep working hard. And at the moment, we find ourselves in a good spot, but understanding that we have a long ways to go.
A guy specifically brought in to put the ball in the back of the net was Kevin Doyle, a designated player, striker signing. How do you feel like he's settling into the group and settling into the league?
Yeah, no, I think over the last probably three, four weeks, he's really acclimated to the way we want to play, to the rigors of travel in this league, and to how physical this league actually is. Coming from the championship, I think he thought, it's going to be a lot less physical, and it took him quite a bit. The altitude, it was hard for him to breathe initially. So there's a lot of, it took quite a bit of time for him to kind of settle in and feel comfortable. And I think the last couple of weeks, he's really done a really good job of getting in there, battling hard, getting in front of goal. He's created some good opportunities for his teammates and found the back of the net a couple of games ago. So really excited about his form and direction that he's moving in for sure.
You mentioned the altitude. Do you guys have a program for guys coming in of how to deal with it, of how to maybe to make it quicker, to make the process quicker?
You know, I don't think that's that's one part that you can't really speed up, and it's the body's ability to produce red blood cells and oxygenate the blood quicker, and that only comes with time and actually living here and training here. And so, you know, the understanding is that people, you know, we get players in there, you know, everyone wants to see them on the field immediately, and obviously having lived here for so long, you know, even when I'm away for a week, coming back at times it's tough. It's a process that you can't, there's no quick fix. There's no remedy. I mean, there's no, what are those hyperbaric chambers that people, sleep in and stuff. But at the end of the day, it's training in altitude and feeling your lungs burn for a little bit. And then after probably a week to 10 days, you start settling in and feeling good again.
Now we're talking about Doyle, Coach. You went to a 4-3-3 here recently. You kind of talked about that tactical progression. It really is about goal scoring. The defense is right there with the best in the league. Unfortunately, you have the least goals in the league. Why the 4-3-3? Why does it fit what you're trying to do?
Well, you know, I think, you know, with not having strikers or you know, the caliber strikers that we had in Doyle and Solniak, it was. You know, he's either Bodgy or at times it was Gabby. And so I felt like playing with one up front and having really, you know, dynamic midfielders in Juan Ramirez and Gabby when he was playing out wide as well. I felt like that was a better fit for the players that we currently had. And then when we brought in Doyle and Solniak and Vicente, coming into a bit of a good run of form, I felt like it was a great opportunity to impose ourselves from an attacking perspective and allow teams to kind of defend three very good attack-minded players that can kind of put them on their heels a bit and then move our lines higher up the field. And so it just presented itself with the players that we had available, whereas in the beginning of the year, I didn't feel like we would pose as much of a threat going forward with that kind of setup. So I think those guys have done a good job, and in doing so, moving teams back and allowing our midfield to move higher up the field and our outside backs to get into the game. And I think the guys are really enjoying it and winning balls higher up the field, closer to their opponent's goal and creating more dangerous opportunities. And so it's all worked out quite well. And of course we lose Luis last game. And so now it's about how do we keep that same type of mentality and mindset without him and the players that we need to plug in to keep that aggressive mindset moving forward.
Now, I look at your squad, Pablo, from this last game, and a lot of veteran presence on the field, and that's all good in MLS, and you know it is. But this team, back when it made the playoffs the last time, was kind of built around youth, the likes of Shane O'Neill, Dylan Powers, now Dylan Serna playing a role. And we're not seeing as much of them as maybe some fans would like. Have you heard those complaints, and why maybe have you gone more veteran than seeing what these youth have to offer?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure everyone's got their opinions as to why or why they want to see the younger players play. And to be fair, it's, you know, it's about consistency in play week in and week out, consistency at the weekend. And obviously with younger players, you're going to be a bit more consistent, right? Because the experiences aren't there and their ability to overcome a bit of hardship isn't necessarily all there. When you have guys like Sam and Pitanari and Marcelo in the middle of the field, you have guys that have a wealth of experience, and you have guys that can make the necessary changes in the game, whether it's individual tactics or collective tactic, to stave off momentum from the opposing team or to impose themselves on the game, you know. And I think Vicente and guys like Luis and Doyle bring that same element. And so the last time we made the playoffs, we were young, but I remember in 2010, when we ended up winning the cup, we had a wealth of experience and guys that were able to make the necessary changes on the field to help lift that trophy.
Not only do you have to deal with figuring out your own team and your own roster, but now you have to put together an all-star team as well to play in the MLS All-Star game. Have you thought about how you're going to make your picks? Is that keeping you up at all at night?
Have you made your picks, or are we just in the dark right now, Coach?
Yeah, listen, it's a work in progress, and obviously it'll be announced by this weekend, I believe. And it's definitely tricky. Obviously there's a wealth of talent in this league, and I think it is important for the league to showcase its players, and I know there's been a bit of grumbling about some of the selections, but at the end of the day, every player that's going to be a part of this All-Star team are players that every coach in this league would love to have on their roster. And I think that's something to understand. And is it a perfect world? Absolutely not. And in any realm of life, it's not perfect. But I think we're all on the same page that all these players are All-Star caliber. And my job will be to somehow put the pieces together in a way that there's a bit of structure, all the while allowing the guys to express themselves. And I think this might be one of the most talented groups of players in All-Star history. And it's just making sure that the individuals can play collectively as a team.
Coach, there are some of those mysteries in the world that take over. Who built the pyramids? What happened to the Mayans? The question that has always been asked is, can Gerrard and Lampard play together in the midfield? You may have the last shot at making this work. Do you have a plan?
Listen, I've gone through different lineups and different formations and have thought about it long and hard. But what you begin to realize is that there's still a couple weeks away, and there's injuries that take place, and there's you know, tired legs or fatigue, and obviously you won't know who's going to show up until, you know, Tuesday night. I have a bunch of ideas. We've talked about amongst our staff as the different formations to try to get all the players on the field in a way that makes sense from a tactical perspective. We thought about everything, and only on, you know, only maybe the week of the All-Star game will we have a better idea as to who's available, how long they can play. But the idea is to have 22 guys and then possibly 23, and have everyone play 45 minutes.
Coach, have you ever been snubbed? Did you have a year where you're like, man, I'm an All-Star. It's for sure. I'm getting this thing, and then it didn't happen for you?
Listen, I felt like my whole career I was snubbed, you know, and I think that was kind of the motivation for me to carry on and continue proving everyone wrong, you know. And I always kind of had a chip on my shoulder, and I felt like it was an All-Star. Now, to be honest with you, I don't know. I think I was a bit unrealistic with my own expectations, so I felt like I was always snubbed. But the reality is, I was probably never snubbed and probably overachieved in my career. So
that's political, man. Kai Kamara's not going on that route right now. I'm assuming he'll be a part of your team. He's not in the Gold Cup. A former teammate, a former mentee, I guess, of yours is Kyle Beckerman, the starting defensive midfielder for the U.S. Let's turn to that tournament. You've played a big role in it with the U.S. Now Kyle's there. Does it surprise you at all that he's become this big of a player for Jurgen Klinsmann? Not late in his career, but maybe on the back half of his prime?
No, I think Kyle has been a guy that has quietly gone about his work in the early years of his career and kind of put his head down and rolled his sleeves. And, you know, he's a kid, when he first came to Miami and I was there, he was a kid that had a chip on his shoulder and wanted to kind of take over the world as a young kid. He won a battle. He'd always want to take me on one-on-one and take everyone on one-on-one. And so he's a guy that just set the bar so high for himself. And all the while, as he continued to work, he became a better player, more belief in himself. And then I think once he finally got a chance with the national team, in particular in 2014, in the World Cup, you saw a guy that was a focal point, that was a mainstay, that was it was a necessary element in what Jurgen was trying to do. And he let his play speak for itself. And he's a guy that, you know, he's a guy of few words, but and he speaks loudly with his football. And I think he's kind of cemented himself as that holding midfielder that can break up plays, but yet has a great vision to play balls forward, not necessarily side to side. And just has a great, desire to win. And so he has all the attributes of what you want as a coach, not to mention he's dependable, and you know that you're going to get a very solid performance from him every game. So I'm not surprised in the least, and very excited to see, you know, him continue to do what he does.
The Gold Cup taking place right now, you had experience in this tournament. Is there maybe one moment or maybe a memory that every time this tournament comes around, you get nostalgic and you go back to it as one of your favorite memories of this tournament?
You know, I think when we won it in 2001, and that was a long time ago, but I remember I wasn't called into the camp. Berhalter got injured. I came in as a center back, and I remember playing alongside Jeff Agus. And we ended up I didn't play the first game, but I think we ended up shutting out every opponent and then winning and beating Costa Rica with guys like Pablo Anchope on the field. And I just remember that was my first real taste of international football, and to do it with a group of guys that were much more experienced than I was. I learned so much, and to be able to, you know, hoist a trophy after the set of games was a great experience for me, and one that I'll probably never forget.
Now, Pablo, I'm going to ask you for some advice here. Hypothetically, let's say that I'm a young player. I just get my first call. I'm going to the Gold Cup. I'm going to World Cup qualifying, whatever it may be. I'm headed out into the wilds of CONCACAF. You're the old hand that's going to give me advice. Forget the tactical stuff. Forget the technical stuff. What about that little bit of extra I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, that you have to be successful in CONCACAF? What are those kind of little tricks of the trade that you employed back when you were on the field in this region?
Well, what I remember from my first experience against the CONCACAF teams is that you got to have a crazy mental mindset, in that in the individual one-on-ones, whoever you're going up against in that game, you almost have to be a bit you got to be rough. You got to be willing to bump the guy away from the ball. You got to be able to get in his head a little bit. You got to be able to play that mind game, because if you don't do it to them, they're so wily and savvy. And they find ways to get into your head. And as a young and experienced player going to these countries, it's so difficult to field and all this stuff. And the last thing you want is a guy that's stepping on your toes and a guy that's, you know, pinching you when you're not paying attention or elbowing you on corners. And so as quickly as you can, from a psychological perspective, however that looks, you know, making sure that you play the game within the game, which is one-upping your opponent, but, you know, being first to the ball, making sure you're bumping them before you jump up for headers, and just making sure that you win that battle first. And I think a lot of times the CONCACAF teams do a really good job, especially when you're playing away from home.
Who's the guy that you remember over the years that, and I don't think dark arts is the right word, but the guy that had that figured out and the guy that you knew was going to do his best to do those sorts of things? I mean, you have the obvious names that people go down the list, Pescadito, guys like that. Who was the one for you that, I'm not saying this is a bad thing, I'm saying this is a guy you respect for his ability to play games on all the fronts.
Yeah, no, I think for me, as a guy from the same country as Guatemala, as Pedro Ramirez, who played in the league here, he was just so aggressive, and he'd go in and toe the ball and actually toe your ankle, or not accidentally, but purposely toe your ankle, and just made every 50-50 challenge feel like it was more 60-40 in his favor. And I felt like I always had to be one step ahead and play one-touch passes around the corner and get it on the other side of him, and try to get in front of him so he can foul me and get yellow card issues and problems. And so, for me, Pando Ramirez was a really tough guy in CONCACAF to play against.
Well, there you go. Pando Ramirez, go back and watch some highlights, folks. He's a guy that I think a lot of people may not know, but has a long history within CONCACAF and MLS. As Pablo said, the Rapids, this weekend, Saturday, 10 p.m., they're headed to Seattle, MLS Live. You can catch that match. You can also watch out for Pablo's All-Star team. He's going to be leading the boys there in Denver in this big, big match. Coach, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck going forward.
Guys, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to chat with you guys. And, yeah, look forward to winning that All-Star game for sure.
There you go. Thanks, Coach. Big thanks to Pablo Mascherini for sharing some of his war stories with us. Watch out in the coming days for the rest of that All-Star roster. Let's turn to the MLS weekend, though. Friday, 11 p.m. Eastern on Unimas. Viernes de Football, it's a big one, man. It's a huge one. The Cali Clásico, the debut in MLS, that is, of Steven Gerrard. He did make his ICC debut. He did play in the U.S. Open Cup, so he's had some time on the field. They're going to take on San Jose, resurgent San Jose. And if I'm right, I listened to the show. Simon said he thinks Jared's going to be the best DP of all time ever.
He thought he looked so good in that one friendly versus Club America where the game didn't count for anything, that he's going to be phenomenal. I'm not as convinced. I thought he looked okay against RSL in the minutes I saw. He played as a second striker. It felt
you're a
like
doubter.
At times.
Yeah, you're.
Yeah, I am a doubter.
Yeah, there you go.
I think it's gonna be amazing. I was lucky. I got to go over to Anfield, in the game. He actually only played a minute against Manchester United. When he got the red card. But like in 30, I got my money's worth. In like 30 seconds, he played like a 45-yard ball on a rope. He played a little 1-2, a crunching tackle, and then he stepped on.
It was the most active 45 seconds in soccer history.
That's typically Steven Gerrard. So we'll see what happens in this one. Definitely one to watch on Friday night, 11 p.m. Eastern. Unimas, as I said, we're going to see the debut, we think, of Frank Lampard on Saturday, 7:30 against New England on MLS Live. We think, we hope. What do you think, Dave? I mean, that first blow with him going out with the calf injury, that was
unfortunate.
Yeah, it was.
I just think you want to get him on the field a little bit before Pirlo gets there so he can get – you don't need to – that way you don't have to get two guys who are such big personalities into the team at the same time.
It's the fan pressure and the media pressure, I think, too. You just got to get that moment over with. They've been waiting for it for so long. It was, oh, he'll be here in January. Then it was the 6 months. Then it's hurt. And then, you know, you have to get that over with. What about Lampard? You look at your loving Gerrard.
Yeah.
I'm not sure on this. I mean, I'm not questioning.
It's Frank Lampard. Frank Lampard, right.
But I want to see how it all fits together with that midfield pieces they're bringing in.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a what do you say, like a traffic jam in there? He's got a lot of decisions to make, Jason.
I think
Christ.
It's going to be perfect.
Really?
No, I don't know. But I do think NYCFC in about a month and a half to 2 months is going to be one of the better teams in Major League Soccer.
Okay.
I think they've
You're on record.
I am on record as saying something that was completely not exact.
Ooh. I like the way they play. I think they keep the ball well. I think they've got a lot of good pieces. It's just they're just trying to find like a consistent run.
Yeah. How does that little field affect them, do you think? Like thinking back to your time, how would playing on a small field affect them?
Yeah, it'd suit the Dynamo. I think he
made the field smaller on purpose,
trying to
right?
Shrink it, yeah. No, I think they need more space. Yeah. I think they're getting used to it, right? It works well. They do well in tight spaces, so that helps them, but yeah, you can't argue. There's no way to argue that having more space for them wouldn't open things up a bit.
I think it makes it so that whoever is dominating possession in one half of the field, it's tough for the defensive team to clear out and like reset offensively. And I think now with these players, they're going to dominate the ball and they're going to play in the other team's halves. Sounds like they got two fullbacks and a center back who can defend one-on-one every once in a while, mm-hmm. and they won't end up giving up goals in games where they dominate possession is the hope.
Yep, 4-4 last week, and yeah. NYCFC is one you want to tune into if you like goals at this point. A couple other to watch, FC Dallas, DC United, 9 p.m. on Saturday, MLS Live. DC United currently the shield holders, for now at least.
Leaders.
Yeah, leaders. Not, you know, they're holding on to it for now. They're borrowing it. They'll maybe give it up. We'll see. FC Dallas, they're that team that you think, man, they're not having that good of a season. And then you look at the standings, and they're right there in the Western Conference. 32 points from 19 games right now. If they were to get a result in this one, they would jump both Seattle and Vancouver in the standings. That's pretty incredible. Also incredible, Sporting KC, the most points per game in the league, are sixth in the West. So
you missed the research bear come on this show on Monday and go off on that.
Yeah, it's absolutely – it's bonkers. It's crazy. Speaking of Vancouver, Cascadia – that's going to go down on Saturday as well, 10:30 p.m. Eastern, TSN in Canada, MLS Live in the U.S. They'll take on the Portland Timbers. And then on Sunday, 5 p.m. ESPN2, the Crew against the Fire. They've already did it this week. Yeah. On Wednesday, Kai Kamara and Ethan Finley combined for a 1-0 win for the Crew on Wednesday night. Will Trapp seems to be finally back. If there was an MVP candidate, if we could combine Ethan Finley and Kai Kamara, that would be like Keithan Camley or something like that. I mean, these guys. Yeah, that was a struggle right there.
Yeah, steer clear of that one. It's nice to see Will Trapp finally back. I've dealt with the concussion stuff before, and he's such a bright young talent. So it's always nice to see
him. What makes a combination like that? These two guys just seem to – I mean, they seem to mesh perfectly. I mean, Ethan wants to get the end line. He wants to float the ball across, and you know Kai wants to go for the slam dunk every time. So what is it about these two?
They just have a good understanding. You know, you can see they know where each other are going to be. You see Kai's able to anticipate sort of that early ball. Finley plays a nice early ball across that turns the defenders around. And Kai's a beast in the air. I mean, like, he's just like an athletic freak. So and he's got quality too. So it's cool to see those guys connect.
Well, there you have it. Watch all the action this weekend, all the news, all the updates, all the highlights, MLSsoccer.com. When we come back, we're going to dive right into Copa Oro.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Mm-hmm. kikuta mani la tuda mang dama play bangkok white cast and mang the extra time like ini diwa ha journalisti.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. New York City, that's where we are. David Goss, Andrew Wiebe, Kalen Carr here taking you through the week. Coming up this weekend, Gold Cup quarterfinals, the first in Baltimore, the U.S. taking on Cuba. A little Cold War action there, although I guess things are thawing now. On the other side of that bracket, Haiti and Jamaica, one of three Caribbean teams that made it to the four? No, you're saying that's three, I thought. Trinidad? Do some quick math.
Cuba, Haiti, Jamaica, and Trinidad. That's four.
Oh, Cuba.
Because Cuba's in the Caribbean.
It's the Spanish-speaking that got me. Anyway, on the other side of the bracket, you have...
This is our Gold Cup expert, by the way.
As you said, Trinidad against Panama, and then Costa Rica, Mexico, which is a huge clash in the quarterfinals. Let's start really quick reactions to that TNT-Mexico game at the end of the group stage. It was a great finale. 4-4. Insanity. Absolute insanity.
This tournament's been insane so far. A lot of times we've talked about it a few times on the show.
Quality sometimes I've thought hasn't been there, but then every once in a while it jumps out.
Because insanity is what we're talking about right now. Right. Pure drama, this tournament, pure CONCACAF, this tournament has been. It's been phenomenal. That game was fun.
Yoda.
Yeah. Yeah. That game was fun. There's deficiencies in Mexico. Defensively a little bit, but
trouble.
The issue offensively is, and they scored four goals, so it sounds crazy to say, is they dominate possession and they go from left to right, but there's nothing cutting edge. No one's creating anything except Dos Santos in these games where teams are sitting back on them defensively, and they just perfectly cycle it from wing to wing, but they never really create anything.
Well, I don't know if we mentioned it during the Geo talk. He did get hurt in this game.
Yeah.
He had to leave the game, a thigh issue, so everybody watching that very, very closely, Mexico fans, MLS fans, LXC fans alike. We'll see what happens with that one. Let's talk about Canada really quickly, though, Kalen, because you were in Toronto. You saw this 0-0 against Costa Rica. They don't score in the tournament. They have almost 600 minutes without a goal, and they go out. Are there any signs of improvement? How did it feel? What was the feeling at BMO Field after this one?
Yeah, it was a bummer, I think. the crowd.
You've been hanging around Jurgen Klinsmann too much, dropping
really?
The bummer.
That
yeah,
his line?
That's his line. It's a bummer. It's very.
I was in Inception. Sitting in those press conferences. It's been exciting stuff. The Canadian fans were out there and sat through the rain. It was just, I don't know, they actually started off well. The first half, they came out and were the aggressive side. I think my old teammate, Juan Chope, with the fire, they knew they only needed a tie.
Everybody's your old teammate.
Yeah.
I've been around now.
It's been around.
I don't know. I think that they could look at, and Jurgen talked about this as well, is timing these games, so the last game they play at the same time, because Costa Rica knew that they only needed a tie to go on.
Yeah.
So they came out and were really conservative, and give Canada credit. They came out and tried to score a goal, but it just wasn't happening for them.
Yeah, you're talking about no cutting edge for Mexico. At least they're putting the ball in the back of the net, regardless. Canada fans with another tough exit from the Gold Cup. The U.S., meanwhile, are moving on. They win Group A. Let's see. They take on Cuba. Cuba, a surprise here,
yeah,
you can definitely say.
Surprise.
A huge surprise. The U.S. go and make three changes to that roster. No Beasler. No Matt Beasler. That was the guy you thought would go in because John Anthony Brooks is suspended for this quarterfinal
match.
Which
we're gonna not talk about the fact that Brooks started in the third group stage game that they didn't have to win when he was sitting on yellow cards.
That's an interesting way to not talk about
that. We're not going to talk about that.
Yeah, definitely not going to talk about that one. Either way, Klinsmann says he has the depth to cope. Not with Beasler, though. He brings in DeMarcus Beasley, who was retired from the international game. That retirement is now over for the knockout rounds of this Gold Cup. He's in for Greg Garza. Joe Corona also in for Alfredo Morales. I think that one makes a lot of sense. Corona just fits better in those diamond roles that they want him to play. Morales, he's really more of a defensive mid, it seems like, for the U.S., although he does play more box-to-box for his club. And then Alan Gordon, Gordo, coming in for Josie Altidore. And that's maybe the most interesting one because Klinsmann came right out and said it. He said, look, Josie is not physically at a point where he can contribute to this team. Altidore goes back to Toronto FC. It looks like he'll probably play this weekend in some role. So not too poor to play, too poor to play for the U.S. right now.
Yeah, it seems very odd. It also seems, I guess, You'd rather him figure it out now than never.
He does like to send out-the-door messages. You remember a while back when he kind of froze him out for a while and said, hey, it needs to be better.
Yeah, and you would think that with the warm-up in against Guatemala where he played him and in all those games that maybe he would have noticed it then rather than during the actual group stage of the tournament. And Alan Gordon, we know what he brings, right? He brings size. He brings physicality. He's going to come off the bench most likely, and he's going to give you an option late in games when you have to push for a goal. He's not really probably going to start any games, I would assume, but it's Jurgen Klinsmann, so I don't know. And I think the biggest move here is Joe Corona, because like you said, I think he's a guy who in tight spaces can create for you, and I think that this U.S. team, they like to sit back and counter. But if they get into a game in this tournament where the other team chooses to do that, they're going to have to create something.
And they're definitely going to happen to them against Cuba. Let's be honest. Cuba's not going to be pushing the envelope. Let's turn back up to the forwards, Kalen. Jesse Zardes and Clint Dempsey, what have you made of their combination together? Because it seems like that's going to be the pairing going forward.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I think Jossie's, you see him combining week in and week out. He's played with some smart players with Landon and Keane. So he really understands movement and he's been a good change of pace for the U.S. I think he's probably been a little bit better off the bench or even in second halves of games. You see him getting stronger. So I'm not quite sure if he's going to be the answer to start or not. I think they like using him on the left. I think Beasley, they didn't bring in to sit, right? I mean, he's not going to come out of retirement. So I think he's going to play left back and allow Fabian Johnson to maybe move up to like a more attacking position on the left flank because they've tried Josie there. I mean, they've tried Jossie there. They've tried Alejandro there. He looked good, but just I think he'll be a good option off the bench.
His fitness just maybe isn't there yet.
But he still had some really bright moments in that last match.
If you were making the decision, Fabian Johnson, is he a fullback or is he a midfielder for you?
Oh, this is going right to Dave's.
I'm just curious.
He's got some beliefs here.
What Kalen Carr thinks.
I like him as a left back. Yeah. I think he's – nobody really talks about it. It's funny. I've been following them, obviously, on the road, and nobody talks about him, but – his quality, if you know, when you're really watching these matches, and I don't think he's had maybe an outstanding tournament so far, but every time I see him play, I come away really impressed.
Yeah, pure ability, and I've thought this for a while. He might be the best player on the team.
Yeah,
just
totally.
Pure well-rounded player, tactics, technical, speed, physically.
I think you could put him into some of the top sides in Europe, and he would fit right in.
Doing that right now. Borussia Mönchengladbach. Let's see predictions. Let's do some predictions here. The U.S., I have to believe, we all think that they're moving on.
They should, not in a negative or a mean way. They should wipe the floor with this team. Mexico put up 6 on them. The U.S. hasn't been flying offensively, but they should be able to overpower this Cuba team. So, yeah, the U.S. is moving on.
Who do they want to see in the semifinals? Haiti and Jamaica.
I think you'd want to see Haiti because I think Jamaica's a better team. I think now let's continue with my picks then. I think Jamaica will win that game. I thought Jamaica was going to have a strong tournament. They played great defensively in Copa America, and they've done it here as well. They've played well defensively, and the goals haven't been consistent, but they have enough playmakers. They have enough guys who are just game changers. You know Barnes can do something for you. You know Dawkins can. Austin can. You just have a few guys who can make something out of nothing. And if you're not going to give up goals, that's all you need in a tournament.
I expect, Kalen, that you're going to go U.S. here. So I'm going to ask you a little bit of a different question. Alvis Powell, the Timbers right back, he left the Jamaican camp either today or yesterday. There was a little bit of a beef. He did not like the amount of playing time he was getting. So he up and left. He just said, see you later. What do you make of that as a player?
Wow. Well, I didn't know that, first of all.
Yeah,
but
I sprung that one on you.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's his right, but I wouldn't be expecting to get a call in anytime soon when you do that. So I guess he wanted to go.
How much does playing time and the disputes around it, how much does that affect the squad on a day-to-day basis? For international, club, whatever it might be?
If you're on a good team, not much, because you're not going to make that stuff public. I think you want to keep that private, go have a conversation with the coaching staff if you're unhappy with the playing time. But first and foremost, you should be supporting your teammates, right? You shouldn't just be sulking around or affecting practice. So maybe it's best that he's not involved.
And especially when you're a young player like him, where it's not maybe your time yet, but it will be.
There's some dues to be paid.
Yeah, he's not 31 where it's if I don't play now, I'm never going to play. Right. And that's why
The only thing I'll say is it's just hard to know exactly what's going on unless you're in there.
Always.
I mean, there could be some sort of personal thing going on. And so I always am a little hesitant to criticized in that situation, but you'd like to think that the team you start with, you know, you can carry through the tournament.
And the before the first game, they also refused, as a squad, they refused to go to practice. So there's been a little bit of chaos, which isn't anything new to CONCACAF, but it's unfortunate when you see a team that looks like they might be going in the right direction. And then,
where it could scuttle their chances,
yeah,
potentially.
And then shoot them in their foot. Where this is a team that should get to a semifinals. And once you're there, it's a knockout. Anything can happen. I mean, they can make history.
Yeah, they've been well organized.
Let's move to the other side of the bracket. Mexico, Costa Rica. Costa Rica has not been the Costa Rica that I'm just going to say it. We pretty much predicted this.
Don't put me in that category.
Yeah, I think I called the middling. I'm standing right by it. This has been as middling as you can possibly be for the type of team that Costa Rica is and the type of team that we expected Costa Rica to be. Just sneaking through the group stage, they now have a massive clash with Mexico. Do they have a chance?
They're going to have to go 0-60 because, I mean, they've looked comfortable. They've never really been pushed too much, but they really haven't been convincing in any of the games they've played in. So now they're going up against the Mexicans, and it's going to be another level for them. So they're going to have to get into gear quick.
Yeah, we mentioned it. Mexico vulnerable defensively. Maybe Brian Ruiz, maybe Joel Campbell, Sabo, maybe some of these guys. We just haven't seen it yet from them, though.
We haven't, although they did put up two against a Jamaica team, which we've all just discussed how organized they've been defensively.
That's true.
I think this game fits them because while your former teammate, Paulo Anchope, isn't playing the same exact style as Pinto did, that's what was good. They sat back, they defended, and they were so good on the counter because Ruiz is so good on the ball and Campbell so fast that the two of them can counter against the team by themselves. They're going to have that opportunity against Mexico. Mexico, I don't know how strong they are defensively if they get put under pressure. Maza Rodriguez, for me, is a train wreck at center back. So if they can get those guys isolated one-on-one, I think that they can get a lead. And we know it's going to be a pro-Mexico crowd at MetLife Stadium. It's going to be huge. If they get down with the whistling and the booing that can sometimes happen, I think it just applies more pressure on the team rather than it can be helpful.
That's probably the best of the quarterfinals. I don't think there's any doubt about that one. Although Haiti, Jamaica could also be good. I think Trinidad and Panama could be good as well. The Trinidad and Tobago, they won the group. They won Group C. Yeah, nobody expected that. They win their first two, then that 4-4 draw against Mexico. Panama getting through kind of by the skin of their teeth there in the U.S. group, but they've got some talent. They've done it in Gold Cups past. Who do you like there, Dave?
I like Panama. I think Panama, while they haven't been perfect, I think that they're strong as a unit and that they have enough guys that can get you goals. And I think Trinidad and Tobago got off to a flying start, and I love the Soca Warriors, and I like the way they play.
You just wanted to say Soca
Warriors. I just
wanted
to say Soca Warriors. And I think they're a fun team. What they did against Mexico was phenomenal. But I just think that Panama is going to come in, and they're going to play very professionally. I think they're going to be smart about the game. And they have a guy in Blas Perez who can get them a winner.
You've been watching Blas a lot. What do you think, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, I've been really impressed. Obviously, I've played against him a bunch, but I don't really go back that far on defense to ever confront him.
Doing a lot of watching from the center circle.
Yeah, because I mean, but he's physical. He gave the U.S. problems. I think, you know, those two young center backs were a little frustrated. He leaves a foot in, you know. He knows how to leave just enough of a foot in to not get a call. And then you see him go down and draw a yellow card where he wasn't really touched. But he's also, once you're kind of expecting that physical play, he's good enough to be able to, like, you know, combine and just use that thought of contact to throw off defenders and then got a goal as well. So I've been really impressed by him.
One more question for you, Kaylin, because you've been following this U.S. team. Timothy Chandler, a lot of pressure. Jurgen Klinsmann has made a lot of excuses or a lot of reasoning for why he thinks maybe he struggled at times. What are your thoughts on being there at the games, watching him play?
He just, for me, how do I say this? He looks very casual. You know, I think as a defender, you always want to have a guy who's worried about what's the worst that can happen and just alert. And I think sometimes that plays to his advantage because he's calm on the ball. But I think defensively, he doesn't have that kind of sense of urgency always, and I think that's what frustrates fans. But Jurgen believes in him. You sit in the press conferences, people ask him questions, and Jurgen's talking about him growing into the team on the field and off the field as well. So I think he's locked in on that right back spot. I don't think it's going
to
change.
Look, his play in the Bundesliga, you know, has been raved about. It's just translating it to the U.S. We haven't necessarily seen it yet. Maybe we will this week in the U.S. playing on Saturday in Baltimore, the other half of the bracket over there at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey on Sunday. All the TV listings, all the coverage, the schedule, the bracket, the standings, all that stuff, MLS MLSsoccer.com. Also, make sure you check out our feature from today, 1991. It was the first ever Gold Cup. Guess who won it? It was the U.S. They shocked CONCACAF. Tim Froh with a great piece on that one. Go check it out. For now, we're going to break. When we come back, the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hi, this is Adrian Heath, Orlando City's head coach. You're listening to Extratime Radio.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. A little bit of a cast switch here. Andrew Wiebe, David Goss, Simon Borg back in the seat. Busy day for you, Simon. I hear you've been doing your thing with me gone, though. Keeping it bombastic. What, this 4-4 game in New York was the best game ever played of all time?
Yeah, we're going back to that. What is this, a rewind of a show?
No, yeah, no, you said it on last show.
Yeah,
we're going back to it? We have
a heavy amount
of response.
I'm disagreeing with you. I mean,
what was the game?
I can't name one. It wasn't that
game. You can't do that. You can't say it wasn't and then not have a game.
You know what? You know what's
so easiest? Then it was.
You know what's easiest? It's just to name the one game, and then when nobody can name the specific thing
okay.
for your
question.
Think.
How about
next
we
show.
Name some,
no, next
no,
show,
no, how about we
back.
Name some
okay.
specific
okay.
games?
Name them up.
We have a few for the Seattle-Portland 4-4 game.
These are people that wrote in?
Yeah. Okay. We have a few from Seattle-Portland 4-4, obviously, from last year. Clint Dempsey with a phenomenal performance.
But again, people mentioning games, what made it special? What made that special?
The fact that there was drama and quality on the field. The fact that they were down 4-2, I believe, and Dempsey had two goals in the last, what was it, 5 minutes or something of that game.
Here's the thing about the New York City-Toronto game. Nobody played defense.
Okay, but you're not going to have a 4-4 game if teams don't play deep. If teams play defense,
but
like
what
you
made
want,
that
you want
there
the game
even,
that he wants.
But there wasn't
so
even
your
a
best
tim-
game.
No,
I didn't. You don't know
what
the best game is.
When did I say that I wonder what he wanted?
You don't know what the best game is, but I bet it's 0-0.
Let me ask you a question, Simon.
Because it would be
great
defensive play.
Canada, Costa Rica, man, I drank that one and just enjoyed every second of it.
We have Red Bull's RSL, which I believe was last year, maybe 2 years ago, 4-3.
That was the Dax
four
game?
Goals, yep, after the 80th minute. Dax with the winner. We have the 5-4 Red Bulls LA game that we discussed on the last show. Beckham, Josie, Juan
that
Pablo.
That was actually the game that got me into MLS. Like I'd liked MLS for that year. I'd kind of like gotten interested, and then I watched that game. It was the year before that, and then that was the year I actually started watching all the games. And I watched that one, and that was a formative game for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
We got a good one from Mark
Fish.
So
just because of that, that's the most important game, just because it got
It probably is. Probably hooked me. Yep.
Good one from Mark Fish again when Clint Mathis scored 5 goals versus Dallas for the Metro Stars.
Oh, I remember that.
So, and Eddie Mendez.
So hold on. That would be
a good friend of the show, was also on board for the RSL Red Bull New York game.
I'm sorry, Eddie. Some of that Costa Rica talk may or may not have been targeted at you.
Uh-oh.
So the Clint Mathis game qualifies as one of the single best performance.
Well, I thought you said Javinko had it last week.
By an MLS player.
Oh,
no. That, thank you for refreshing my memory. I mean, it gives me goosebumps just to think about the run that Mathis made.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was against Dallas. Oh, my gosh.
Don't even know. You're not even sure.
That was the last time.
I could put you on the stand and you would perjure yourself.
That was the time where I was convinced we were witnessing the best American player of all time, Clint Mathis.
Yeah.
And then he had the knee injury, and then it went south from there.
Kieran Downey emailed us and said that the 4-4 game may have been the greatest regular season game, which, by the way, the ones I just read off Twitter,
okay,
that's
I know
what
you're
I
coming
for.
With a playoff game, the 3-3 DC New England.
Nope. Playoff game 2003 San Jose versus LA. Quakes were down 4-0 in the second leg and come back with 5 goals. So we had that one. We also did have 2004 DC versus New England. And they said because of the quality on the field, Moreno, Gomez, Twellman, Joseph, Dempsey as a rookie.
Freddie Adu
with the PK in the top corner that Dempsey also missed in that shootout. And speaking of Freddie Adu, I think Andrew Wiebe over here wants to take credit for Freddie Adu's
No, I'm not
going to
take credit.
We know how that went
credit.
Down. We know how that
credit.
Went down. Yeah.
Simon definitely, he was a big part of that question.
I wasn't even on the interview.
Oh, you weren't?
But here's how it went down.
Oh, no, it was Matt Doyle.
Here's how it went down.
Yeah, I tried. It's the
you
other
guys,
ball guy.
Freddie Adu listened to that podcast.
Think so?
He absolutely listened to that podcast. He told his agent about it. then connection was made.
He said, hey, look, Runyon kind of, he hesitated as if, you know, like, oh, I would be, but I don't want to tamper. And this is a good move for Freddie. This is the move that everybody's been saying he should have made for a long time, right? I mean,
playing for a coach that believes in him at a level that may give him time, I think, is what makes people excited about this move.
And Runyon says he's not out of shape, but, you know, look, it's a press conference to announce a signing. You're not going to sit next to a guy and be like, yeah, he's pretty chubby right now, but we're going to run it off him. So who knows? He might be in shape. He might be able to play.
Fantastic fit. Fantastic.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. That's an exciting one for U.S. soccer fans to watch. Look, Freddie Adu, he's still pretty young.
I'm the biggest Adu defender out there. I think he needs a coach to give him the keys to the car and say, do your thing, man. And let him go, and you guys are going to see the quality Freddie Adu.
Just in case this doesn't work out, though, I want Freddie Adu to know, because now we know he listens to this show, that there is a co-ed team on Sundays in Brooklyn at Bushwick Inlet Park.
Really
that will give
number
him
10?
The keys to the car. Yeah. If he needs that opportunity,
it's more of a jalopy than it is a car.
Jalopy. Then the keys are available if he gets in contact.
Some weeks it runs, some weeks it doesn't.
Is it
look,
a jalopy or a gelati?
Jalopy. It's not a gelati.
Gelati, no, it's an ice cream. It's like, from Italia.
A lot of mixing and matching here. Big thanks to Pablo Mastroianni for joining us. Also, big thanks to Kalen Carr. We always enjoy having him on. You can watch coverage of him. He's going to cover the Gold Cup for us all the way through the final here on MLSsoccer.com. For the guys, I'm Andrew Wiebe. We'll see you around next time.